How are you? Welcome to the Drive Podcast. My name is Ted Henley. Drones, autonomous vehicles, GPS, satellite imagery, those are just a few of the ways tech is making farming more efficient. On the podcast today, you'll find out about the Smart Farm Network and what researchers behind the network are hoping to accomplish. Also on the podcast today, is Ottawa really spending billions to upgrade NORAD's defense systems? A few weeks ago, earlier this month, the federal government gave $5 million to the Smart Farm Network. And I, to be honest with you, I had no idea that we had a smart farm network. So to kind of, so I can pick her brain this afternoon, Dr. Joy Agnew is joining us, the Associate Vice President of Applied Research out of Olds College. Dr. Agnew, thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So what is the Smart Farm Network?
Well, Smart Farm Network was an initiative that was launched just last year, actually, in June of 2021. So I'm not surprised you haven't heard of it yet. We're still very early, I guess, in development of developing a framework for collaboration among Canada's smart farm instances. And really, we're developing with the goal of ultimately accelerating the development and adoption of ag tech and smart practices to overall improve productivity and sustainability of food production in Canada, which is a really big, audacious goal, I guess. But really, our focus is on helping producers better understand which tech might be applicable to their specific operation, because ag is such a complex and diverse industry. We know we can't do this alone, and so we need to leverage and work with and collaborate as many other smart farms as we can across Canada.
It makes total sense to me, Dr. Agnew, because, I mean, producers for decades and decades have been sharing best practices with each other, so this makes so much sense to me. I'm glad it's being done.
Yeah, I think so too, which is why I'm glad that we are leading it, and we have had so much interest and uptake from various stakeholders, including other smart farms, obviously, just wanting to learn more about it and how they can take part either formally as part of the formal network or even informally just within our communication channels, because there's so much great work being done in Canada, and just however we can accelerate that knowledge transfer and knowledge sharing and sharing of lessons learned, we want to help with that.
Yeah. Okay. Can you give us a few examples of, some of the ways that, I guess some of the research that's been kind of, boosting efficiencies and that type of thing?
Oh, yeah. The list is endless, I guess. So each of the smart farms right now are working on their own sort of suite of projects, right? Ranging from water management and nutrient management and new digital tools for managing data and utilizing data and predictive analytics, all of that great stuff. So each smart farm is doing that work kind of, on their own with their own partners or their own collaborators. And then within the network itself, we have a common project that we are working with each of the sites on. And this year, it's a project focused on utilizing weather stations and microclimate sensors and helping understand what's the best placement of those. Do you need multiple on the same farm or in the same field to get the right kind of information? Where do they have to be placed within the farm? So that's the kind of information we're generating as a group, and then we'll disseminate that out. But the type of technologies that are being deployed and used on each of the individual smart farms, the list is endless. And so I highly encourage anybody interested in the details, I guess, to visit the Olds College Smart Farm website, and there's links to various projects and technologies, and then links to each of the other smart farm sites as part of the network right now as well with their projects.
Very cool. And so I understand that the Smart Farm Network, it's not just in Alberta, right? Like, it goes right across the country, correct?
That's the intent, is that it'll be a pan-Canadian smart farm network. Right now we have sites in Alberta and Saskatchewan.
Okay.
But our goal is to expand within the next year to include at least two additional sites, maybe three additional sites, that will cover as many geographic zones and cropping systems and production systems really as possible, because like I said, the ag sector in Canada is so diverse and we want to represent as much of that as possible.
Yeah, I bet. Is there one or two of the kind of tech, I'm using the term experiment, it's not the word I'm looking for, but is there one or two of these techs that are being tested and kind of worked on that have really kind of stuck in your brain as really kind of groundbreaking stuff?
Oh, all of it? I probably have one of the best jobs right now in the world, actually, because okay. it's so cool to see what's coming, what's really been out there and tried and true and what can be tweaked, I guess, to really improve that productivity and sustainability of food production. But some of the really cool, I guess, I'm going to change your question a little bit.
Sure,
The coolest thing that I think I didn't think would be viable, but I think is probably more technically and economically viable than even I thought like 3 years ago, is autonomy and autonomous equipment, even for big crop production.
Wow.
It is like robots in the field, essentially. We've been working with robots in the field for the last three growing seasons now, and the technical viability of that and the reliability of it and the robustness of it is far beyond where I expected it to be in 2022. So I think it's closer to a reality and closer to being economically viable than anybody really thinks, other than the people that are working on it. And yeah, it's going to be groundbreaking.
Yeah, that's fascinating stuff. The autonomous vehicles working for whatever job, that's amazing, because they can go 24 hours a day, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, so all the information and all the breakthroughs that are being kind of realized through on the smart farms and through the network, what's going to be done with all this information? Is it going to be just put out to the general public, or is it going to be part of a massive report that's filed with the federal government, or what's happening with it?
So I guess the individual projects happening on each of the farms, the information is shared in whatever, I guess, format works best for that program or that model. At the Olds College Smart Farm, we share information throughout the project lifecycle. So we have, you know, project updates, including fact sheets and newsletters, and we have a two-day expo in the summer where people can come out and, you know, get hands-on opportunities to see and work with some of these technologies and see demonstrations in the field. So we're constantly sharing information and requesting feedback from industry and from farmers about, you know, how applicable is this to you? Or what do you need to see out of this type of tool for it to be workable for your farm? So we are constantly getting information out and then requesting feedback. Within this Smart Farm network specifically, yes, there's formal reporting to the government because it is through government funding. But again, each of the sites is really all about extending that to the stakeholders of interest, mainly producers, but also other players within the ag tech space that just need this kind of feedback and understanding how these things work on farms.
Fascinating stuff. This is a great conversation. Thank you for this afternoon. And just if anyone's listening and they want to check out the website that you mentioned a couple of times here, what's the web address?
Oldcollege.ca, and then you can navigate to the Smart Farm from there, and there's various links and resources right on there that'll take you to other Smart Farms or our newsletter or even our interactive farm tour. If you aren't able to come visit us in person, you can do an interactive visit with all the various projects on our Smart Farm.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Agnew. I appreciate the chat today. Thank you for this.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Have a great evening.
You too.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. That's Dr. Joy Agnew, the Associate Vice President of Applied Research out of Olds College. Again, Olds College, one word, oldscollege.ca, and just click on Smart Farms. I can see it right here on the landing page, and there's all kinds of information on here. This is fascinating stuff, right? Using tech to become more efficient and the autonomous farming options that are out there. This is just fascinating stuff. I'm glad we were so curious about this and we booked Dr. Agnew, because who knew that this groundbreaking research was being done? Canada is going to spend about $40 billion over 20 years to upgrade NORAD defenses.
The reality is that we will continue to look at this policy going forward we will engage in constant analysis of the policy to ensure that Canada has a proper response to missile threats across the board.
That's Canadian Defense Minister Anita Anand unveiling the financial details earlier today. $4.9 billion is going to be spent over, well, the next few years here. For some perspective, joined by, well, someone that I want to actually, I'm looking forward to this conversation this afternoon, joined by Dr. Robert Hubert, professor of political science out of the University of Calgary, also a member of the Macdonald Laurier Institute and the Canadian Global Affairs Institute. Dr. Hubert, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
For people who do not know, and I don't know how many people in the general public know, what exactly does NORAD do?
Well, I mean, at the most bluntest level, it keeps us safe.
Okay.
What NORAD has always been about is being able to provide a surveillance mechanism to ensure that the Russians, well, the Soviets, first of all, but then the Russians, never came to the conclusion that they could successfully launch a nuclear strike on us. It's all about them knowing that we're going to know so that if they fire it at us, we fire at them and we all commit mutual suicide. And that's the bedrock of nuclear deterrence throughout the whole Cold War era. So it's critical that we have that capability of knowing what the other side is doing.
Yeah. And the money that the federal government announced today, is this long overdue?
Well, it's totally long overdue, and I got to give a little bit of a correction to your introduction.
Sure.
Because you're taking the government too much at faith. We've heard from this particular government these promises of these huge amounts, you know, and you're not wrong to quote her, because she did say the 20 or 40 billion or whatever it is, but that's always the promises. This has always been sort of the trait of this particular government, is to promise a lot of money, but it's not actually delivered. What she has done is she has said that we will be spending an additional $4 to $5 billion, and it's a little bit unclear on whether or not it's new money, if it's going to be amortization, which means to pay for, you know, it's like paying for your credit card. You're paying for stuff that you already bought. And how much is that going for new stuff? And it's over a six-year period, or a five-year period. So it's, you know, about $1 billion a year, which sounds a lot, but how badly we've let NORAD deteriorate from our perspective, it's not all that much, to be honest.
Okay, you took the next question right out of my mouth, actually. So I mean, what needs to be upgraded then? Everything?
Pretty well. I mean, let's put it in this context. The system that we have in place right now, the last time we did a major update was 1985.
Wow.
The aircraft that are there to enforce it, it's not just simply about knowing nowadays, it's also about being able to shoot down the missiles and shoot down the other guy. Those aircraft are 40 years old. It's sort of like, okay, so we're upgrading several new radar systems. That's great. It's the over the horizon radar, and we're putting two new systems in place. We're also developing a third sort of back or a third system to make it multi-layer. So all of that is great. We're not doing anything in terms of underwater, or at least she hasn't said we're doing anything. We're not doing anything in terms of having that response capability. We still haven't made a decision on actually buying new fighter aircraft. We're talking about buying new aircraft, but nothing in that particular context. And here's the dinger. In her announcement, along with the chief of staff for the military, they said that they wanted an integrated system to be able to detect and respond to all missiles. But, oh, by the way, we still are going to be the only country amongst the American allies, and I mean literally the only one. All of NATO signed on. All of the Asian countries have signed on not to be a member of the ballistic missile defense. So we're going to defend against small nuclear missiles coming in, but we're not going to defend against the big ones.
Wow. I did not know that.
Well, that's why you called me on, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I did not know that we're the only ones.
We're the only ones. We even, this was done at the Warsaw NATO summit. I think it was the Warsaw. But we actually had a meeting about this with all the NATO heads of states. And Canada actually agreed and said, yeah, this is a good idea for all of the other NATO countries to agree to be a part of the American ballistic missile defense. And so we agreed to that, but we don't agree to it for Canada. So we're basically what it's really done is we're counting on American goodwill. So we don't have to pay for anything. And we assume that if the North Koreans or the Chinese or the Russians do in fact fire a ballistic missile that needs to be shot down, the Americans will do it just because we're nice guys, but, you know, cheap, I guess. But everyone else has signed on. Like I said, NATO, the Japanese, Australians, South Koreans, we're the only ones that haven't. And she made a point, you know, she didn't raise the point, but one of your colleagues in the media asked a question. Well, actually, there was two of them asked a question this morning. Hey, are we going to reverse that decision that Paul Martin made in the last days of his government? And her answer was no, we are not.
Okay. So what are you going to be watching for, Dr. Hubert, then, as this all kind of unfolds? Are there certain things that you're hoping to see, I guess?
Yeah, well, yeah, actually spending the money.
Yeah.
Part of the problem is, and they keep coming back, this is where they float that 40-20 billion, you know, it change, well, I shouldn't say it changes, but they go back to this defense policy that they introduced in 2017. It's actually not a bad policy. It does address and it does get a lot of things right. But they had this big hullabaloo about the fact that they said, well, it's fully costed. Okay, well, what does that mean? I study this stuff, and I didn't have a clue what they were talking about. And they turned around and said, okay, no, we've gone through, and we've got this budget ahead of us of how we're going to spend for this. Okay, it's 2017, and you're sitting there going, okay, well, maybe this is different from all other governments, because if they actually did that, it would have been a substantial change in moving forward. They didn't do any of it. I mean, one of the big things that they had in strong, secure, and engaged is they needed to modernize NORAD. This is the first money that they're putting into the actual efforts that have to go into it. So I guess it's a little bit talk is cheap. You know, yeah. You can say all sorts of things, and kudos to them that they get it right that they have to do it, and kudos to them that they are spending on the over the horizon radars, which, by the way, we developed back in 2000, I think it's 2010, 2011, and then just decided never to bother to put it in for reasons that, of course, was never explained to the common Canadian. And so kudos to them that they're actually spending on that, but don't be pretending that this is somehow, you know, a component of this huger number that you're promising to do, because you promise a lot of stuff when it comes to defense, but you don't give it. I mean, you know, let's face it, this is a government that refuses to acknowledge that the war in Ukraine started in 2014. You know, that, you know, the Ukrainians died and they invaded in eastern Ukraine and the Russians seized Crimea, but that was an annexation. That wasn't a war. And, you know, one of the things that they went on in the speech today was, well, things changed February 2022. Well, it's sort of like, well, if you've actually been paying attention, it changed back in March of 2014. But, you know, good on them for at least spending on the radar systems.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Hubert. Appreciate the clarity in the conversation this afternoon. Thank you for this.
Okay. Talk to you next time,
Ted. All right. Have a good evening. That's Dr. Rob Hubert, professor of political science out of the University of Calgary. He's also a member of the McDonnell Laurier Institute and the Canadian Global Affairs Institute, talking about the $40 billion, well, that announcement today, it's going to be spent over 20 years, apparently, to upgrade the NORAD defenses amid, air quotes, new threats. Hey, I'm Ted Henley. Thanks for listening to The Drive Podcast. Please tell your friends about what you're hearing. Also, please rate, review, and subscribe. This podcast, of course, is free wherever you get your favorite content. If you want to hear The Drive with Ted Henley live, then please tune in or stream the show weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on Global News Radio 770 CHQR.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone.
Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.